Yeah, but there's one right here. I think I can read it.
Are you comfortable or do you need a chair? Do you need a chair or are you comfortable?
Easily do that, so thank you.
It will, for sure. So we call having seen people at one of our meetings before.
That's what happens when you don't gavel. Brains on.
Being so popular, but.
Something like that, yeah. I didn't say that. I just.
Take that off.
Get in line if you come out. Get in line. So it's below 40 degrees, you don't turn. Well, that's nice. It's been sold when you walked right by, right?
Well, being 7 o'clock, call the meeting to order. And I think think as the first order of business, we will go around and introduce all of the people who are involved in this meeting in a official capacity of some sort. So, can we start with you, Easton?
I'm Easton Loving. I serve on the Flavanna Board of Zoning Appeals.
Carol Walker. Serve on the Flavanna County Board of Zoning Appeals.
Scott Miller. I'm Code Compliance Officer with Flavanna County.
Thank you. I'll let you introduce yourself,
too. Gwenda Applegate. I'm a court reporter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jason Stewart, Flavanna County Planning and Zoning Administrator.
I'm Fred Payne, County Attorney.
I'm Christina Ashigidri. I'm an Assistant County Attorney.
I'm Patricia Eager. I serve on the Planning Commission and on the Board of Zoning Appeals.
I'm Peter von Kaiserling, and I am the Vice Chair of the Board, but serving in that position of Chair this evening because Harold is out of town. So, were you able to get all the names and whatnot that you needed? Holler if we get ahead of you. All right, our first order of business is approval of the minutes from the last meeting, and you said you had a comment on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman of the evening, on the second page of that, on the top of the second page, we have a typo we need to address. It's in our motion. It says Mr. Kaiserling moved to approve/deny. I think, in fact, we did approve.
Correct.
That motion, so it needs to be corrected in the minutes, please. Thank you. With that change, I move that they be approved.
Seconded.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is any further discussion? And Jason, you'll see to that meeting in minutes, correct?
Yes, sir. Thanks.
And then you might as well hold them until Harold gets back and he can sign it in that case. You call for a question?
Shall we vote?
All those who are in favor of approving the minutes as presented with the edit, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Is there any nays? All right. The minutes are approved as presented with the edit and will be subsequently corrected and signed. All right. Our, let's see. I think we can now open our public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a suggestion?
Certainly.
The applicant, the appellant, has raised two procedural issues, and I think it would be wise if the board would take those up first and dispose of those one way or the other, because they may affect whether you're going to go forward tonight, and
yes,
so
sir.
How. First one, the first issue is that the appellant has challenged at least two members of the board for conflict of interest. He's also accused me of conflict of interest, and I can tell you right now, I'm not going to accuse myself. I don't have a conflict of interest. But I think it would be appropriate to take those up first, because that'll deal with the membership of the board. The second thing the applicant, the appellant, has raised is whether the advertisement, the statutorily required advertisement, is appropriate. And as I understand it, we would ask that the matter be deferred to a later date. Obviously, if you're going to do that, you should take that up before you take up the substance of the matter. So I would suggest that you take those up in that order, the conflict issues first, and then the defer.
Okay, does anyone on the board want to raise the issue of a conflict of interest and therefore disqualify themselves from voting on the matter?
Yes.
Carol does.
I have a conflict of interest, and I will recuse myself from voting.
Are there others?
One thing about it, you will need to refrain from participating as a member, whether voting or debating or anything else. You're free, of course, to speak as a citizen.
I'm assuming that I must be the other one to question, because I'm an adjoining landowner, but I don't feel that I have a conflict. I don't have any ill will, or I don't see his property. It's on the other side of a creek, so we never run into one another. I don't have a problem hearing this.
Great. The rest of the board members concur?
Yes.
Okay, then I think we'll proceed, and Carol is going to stand back from the discussions and the voting. Is there anything else that you think we should cover? Oh, with the issue of publication?
Yes.
And the issue of publication, I checked with Jason on that, and we looked at it and feel that it is definitely within the limits that the state requires. So we elected based on that to go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I may. My name is Dale Mullen. I'm an attorney with LeBar Woods, and I represent the appellate in this matter. First, Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Chair, did you receive a letter that was dated November the 26th from the Planning Department with regards to these particular matters?
I received a letter from them just covering that issue. Actually, it wasn't from the Planning Department, but I think it was a copy of what you had responded to the Planning Department on the issue of publication.
I think Mr. Mullen is talking about the extensive documentation that he sent to me, and I asked the Director of Planning to forward it to you because it dealt with this issue.
Okay.
Is that what you're talking about, Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Oh, that I did receive, sir.
Okay. And the reason, Mr. Chair, is
for the record, Mr. Chairman, that was a 50-page email followed up by a 50-page fax with a cover letter on top. And I forwarded it to you on Monday. It's dated November 26th, but it was not transmitted to my office until between 5:30 and 6 o'clock on Wednesday. And of course, Thursday and Friday were holidays, so I didn't know what it was until I got in on Monday, and I transmitted it to Mr. Stewart within a couple of hours after I got and had a chance to see what it was.
Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. I disagree with the times as stated by Mr. Payne as far as transmittal are concerned. I do believe it was transmitted before 5. Nevertheless,
5:46 is the time on your email.
Nevertheless, it is important to fully consider all the issues with regards to whether or not it's even appropriate to go forward. First, Mr. Chair, I would say respectfully, I believe that the conflict issue with Ms. Eager does warrant consideration that cannot be done in this public forum. There's no reason to rush on this particular piece of property, and the reasons, as stated by Mr. Payne, are incomplete. And I'd like an opportunity to say what the reasons are that these should be continued until the correct date and time. With regards to that, sir, December 2nd is not an appropriate amount of time given the information that was provided to the BZA. The Virginia Code requires that the papers of the matter be transmitted to the BZA. Sir, I have papers that have not been transmitted to the BZA that directly pertain to the decision in this matter. Specifically, a former zoning administrator made a determination about one of these pieces of property that was never included in any of the information to the BZA. That's not fair to the public, that's not fair to the appellant, and that's not fair to the Board of Zoning Appeals. The papers mean all of the papers. Second, I would offer respectfully that there are additional papers that were not transmitted to the BZA that do specifically have to do with these properties. It's entirely proper that the appellant should have the amount of time necessary to gather together their presentation of facts and evidence before this board. It's entirely appropriate that the public have all of the access to that information. It's entirely proper that those be considered prior to this board making a determination. I have no doubt that this board wants to make the right determination, but I will tell you that the right determination can only be made with all of the evidence and with respect once it has been determined whether or not there is a continued conflict with the fact, and we believe this to be true, that this particular matter has not only been discussed with Ms. Walker as complainant, but has also been discussed prior to this board that sits as a quasi-judicial board and that certain determinations have already been made. I don't think that that can be done in the next few minutes prior to a hearing, and because of that, I do not believe that the appellant can receive a fair hearing. To date, the appellant has not received any information that any member has even considered disqualification up to the point that Ms. Walker decided that she wanted to. Third, sir, I will say that there is an irregular notice and timing of hearing that goes beyond the advertisement that was listed in the newspaper. As an example, the appellant asked for and received the bylaws of the BZA. The bylaws of the BZA provide that the County of Fluvanna sets regular meetings the second Tuesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. This is not so noticed as a meeting in accordance with the bylaws, and it seems that if appellants are to be held with the strict formalities and observance of the rules, then so too should the board be. Number three, presence of certain personal property on two real properties zoned both A1 and B1 are at issue here. There are material papers constituting the record that have been omitted from the information. I've stated that before, but I want to put a finer point on that. After the notice of appeal is filed, the zoning administrator is required to promptly transmit to the BZA all papers constituting the records. The county asserts that a particular ruling of the General District Court is dispositive of the current violations alleged as a contract for storage yard. With respect, sir, nothing in the package comports with the notice with regards to the determination by the court. As an example, the notice and due process is important. And due process, Mr. Chair, means notice and an opportunity to be heard. Here, the appellant has been deprived due process because a letter that was allegedly sent on a letter decision from the General District Court, which we dispute as dispositive, it was never produced as part of the file. It's the basis of the allegation. And until that issue is resolved, this board cannot fairly decide the action. And I would say respectfully, even if you could, you would look at the allegation as stated tonight and you will say that simply doesn't fit the evidence that has been or could be presented. That needs to be addressed. It cannot be addressed in time for a hearing tonight. In the A1 property, the appellant owner is not a contractor. The personal property located on the subject property is not operated by or stored on behalf of a contractor. And the plain meaning of the code is simply not met under these circumstances. Now, that's important not just as an evidentiary matter that we will argue at an appropriate time, but it's important because the notice, the actual notice that is provided to the appellant from which he can form the basis of his case is defective. And having been notified of that defect, the county has taken no step to try to correct that defect. That's important, and the Board of Zoning Appeals should have the opportunity to consider that before moving forward with a hearing in haste. There are material omissions as to papers that do impinge on the B1 property in Fork Union that the Board of Zoning Appeals needs to be provided, and the appellant should not be put in the position of having to track down what the actual record comprises in order to get a fair hearing before the Board of Zoning Appeals. Additionally, appellant's manager, the appellant here is a LLC, but the appellant's manager was told that a staff report would be available 2 weeks, Mr. Chairman, 2 weeks before the BZA hearing, and that the appellant would receive notice. The plaintiff received notice mailed to him, and that notice was dated November the 13th, 2014. However, the notice that was allegedly made on November the 13th, 2013 was not mailed until 4 days later, November the 17th, 2014. These are provided as exhibits that I'm going to provide these to the chair, if I may. It's not a court, but I'll ask if I can approach. I'd like to make this.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Would you really like to see those, sir?
If you look, sir, at Exhibit 5.
Mr. Mullen, can I ask, what is that the same document that you...
It is. Yes.
If he says that's the same document that he emailed me, I don't need to look at it.
Yes.
I'm just relying on your representation, Mr. Mullen.
It is exactly the same, Mr. Payne. And under Exhibit 5, you'll see that a letter that was dated November the 13th was held for 4 days until it was mailed to the appellant. There's no explanation been given, none attempted for why that is the case, but it deprived the appellant the amount of time necessary to adequately form the basis for this appeal. Now, having said that, no explanation has been offered for why the notice of hearing was held for 4 days from the date of the notice. An incomplete staff report was provided to appellant's manager on November the 18th, 2014. It did not include the source documents that appellant's manager expected to receive. And this is important because one aspect of case number 1402, that's the A1 property, references prior action by the court and a prior action by the county. More than this, at least one determination has been favorable to appellant, and that was not included for the BZA. If a prior zoning administrator, Mr. Chair, offered an opinion, a legally binding opinion in writing, that certain aspects did not comprise a violation of the zoning ordinance for Flavanna County, that seems to be an important piece of information that the Board of Zoning Appeals would like to know in this case. It's not a part of your packet. It just wasn't included. On November the 20th, a public notice was published in the Flavanna Review. You can see Exhibit 6 from the packet that I've introduced for the record here. It was advertised on November the 20th, and the notice affirmatively states that copies of the complete text of the above ordinance and associated plans are available for public review. The staff report, appellant's manager found out, the staff report and the related plans were not even available until a full day later, when the appellant's manager went to the Office of the Zoning Administrator on November the 21st to review the staff report and see the documents that were to comprise the plans of the BZA and county staff. On the 21st, Mr. Chair, appellant's manager was told that the staff report had changed and that he would be receiving a copy of that staff report. Now, that's a day after the notice was published, even by the reckoning of Mr. Payne and his review of the requirements under the code. Now, the requirements under code may have allowed that it be published on a certain day for a meeting to occur today, but the notice that was published said the information would be available, and it wasn't. That's not fair to the BZA, that's not fair to the public, and certainly that's not fair to the appellate. He deserves more than from the 21st until the present day to prepare this appeal. Additionally, the issue of publication, I did check and I found out, Mr. Chair, that the Flavanna Review is actually published a day earlier in every case. It's not a fact that I was able to ascertain when I produced this letter, so I'll drop that one. I will also say that the bylaws, Virginia Code, all provide that the chairman of the Board of Zoning Appeals can compel the attendance of witnesses. And in a case where the complete record is not provided to the Board of Zoning Appeals by the time of the hearing, we're put in the position of having to call witnesses to come. And we've asked that you specifically compel the attendance of at least one witness. Mr. Chair, the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution guarantees certain rights for people and the securities in their property. More than that, Virginia Code specifically provides for certain protections to be provided to landowners. Appellant's manager has been trying for the last several years to do two things. One is to start and run a successful business in the Fort Union District, and number two, to start and run a successful farm on the A1 property. The decisions that this Board of Zoning Appeals makes matter. They're important. They have weight. And it's important that the appellant should have adequate time to prepare from a complete record that's provided to the public, the Board of Zoning Appeals, and also to him. sir, I will say respectfully, from November the 21st until the present day, simply isn't enough time, especially given the infirmities of the process that I've pointed out in the letter and the six exhibits that I've introduced into the record and the argument that I've made tonight. And I appeal to you, a heartfelt appeal from a landowner. The decision that's made in this particular case will have an effect, intended or unintended, on businesses and farms in Fluvanna County beyond that which is done in this room. The decision is important, the decision will matter, and Mr. Chair, it's important that you get it right. To get it right, we respectfully ask that the meeting be held on the proper date, at the right time, and that we move this hearing off to a date of January the 6th, which is adequate time to hear it within the statutorily required guidelines. It comports with each and every rule of the Board of Zoning Appeals bylaws, and it will not prejudice this board, this county, the public, or the appellate. So I respectfully ask, based on all of these things, that you move this to January the 6th, when a proper hearing can be held, considering all of the evidence and the complete record. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Would you like to comment? Okay.
Yes, sir. I'm going to try to go down these in more or less the order Mr. Mullen presented them. First of all, the statute requires that the zoning administrator provide to the board copies of the records on which he relied for his opinion. And that's been done. There was a reference to an earlier decision that related to a different issue on one of these properties as to whether a particular use was permitted. It wasn't the use that we're talking about here. It was another use. That was not something that the zoning administrator relied on. If the appellant thinks that's significant, he obviously has an opportunity to present that to the board or whatever that's worth. But to my mind, the transmission of the documents was in compliance with the statute. The second thing that Mr. Mullen seems to have some sort of conspiratorial idea here that there are previous discussions that have gone on. He didn't say what those were, so it's hard for me to address that. But
would you like to comment, Mr. Mullen, on these discussions you mentioned?
Appellant's manager believes that members of the Board of Zoning Appeals have discussed the case prior to reaching the Board of Zoning Appeals. He has not been privy to these conversations, and so I'll simply leave it at that. If the members of the Board of Zoning Appeals represent that that's not true, then you will have to accept that answer, I suppose.
My understanding of the requirements are that the board can't meet in one majority or in, but one by one is apparently an acceptable thing in the state of Virginia, so that if we happen to discuss it, crossing paths between two people, that's acceptable. And I believe that's correct. And Fred can comment on whether that's true or not.
Well, that would allow them that the fact is true.
Hmm?
That would allow them that the fact is true. I would take it from the comment.
It is allowed that the fact is true, that I am aware of the fact that a couple of members of the board have discussed this amongst themselves, and that's a legitimate discussion.
If the issue is Mrs. Walker, since she was the complainant on this, I don't think that's the same issue, because she's, in that case, she's not acting as a member of the board, she's acting as a citizen. So, again...
So in either case, it doesn't matter?
Well, it certainly doesn't matter, the latter. You should not be discussing the substance of the matter outside of the meetings, but again, for Mrs. Walker, she's entitled as a citizen to discuss with anybody she pleases what's going on. So that's it. That's it. I think that's a.
That's an interesting response, Mr. Chair. But the response is, Mr. Payne says Mr. Mullen believes that conversations are occurring outside the confines of this particular body, and the response is, yes, it's true, but we think it's correct.
Mr. Mullen, that's not what I said, so please don't put words in my mouth. I said that there's not evidence of a conspiracy. That was the word I used. The point about this is, if the members of the board, shouldn't be discussing the substance of the case outside of the meeting. Now, again, Mrs. Walker, as the complainant, has a right to discuss things with other people. I don't know whether she has or not. I know she has with the staff, but of course that's nothing wrong with that. But anyway, that's, if you've now heard what the allegations are.
She verbalized her concerns and complaint to me, and I don't know whether she did to other members of the board or not, but what she discussed was simply her complaint of what had been happening, and that's the extent of it, and that's all that I would have permitted. I said, we're not going further into what the board's going to do or decide or anything else. This is the facts as you present them. I hadn't read the package entirely through then, so I didn't even know if the package substantiated them. So,
the next issue that Mr. Mullen raised was there's been no consideration of disqualification. It would certainly not be improper for a member who determined he had a conflict of interest to disqualify himself in advance, but it's certainly not required. What's required is that if there's a conflict of interest for a member, the member has to announce that conflict and disqualify himself before participating in the meeting. So the fact that that wasn't done in advance, to my mind, is completely irrelevant. The irregularity of the timing, that this is not a regular meeting. The statute requires that the board set an appropriate time and place for considering its appeals, and that's what happened. The statute does not require that matters only be heard at particular times. So that's not dispositive of this issue either. I put a note there, something about personal property, and I don't remember what that was, so I'll skip over that. The matter of the General District Court opinion, there appears to be an issue here that the appellant wasn't notified that the General District Court opinion was going to be the subject of discussion tonight, which it certainly will be. The General District Court opinion is dated September 30th, 2013, and it's a letter on the letterhead of the 16th Judicial District, Culpeper County General District Court, and that's because Judge Durer sits primarily in his primary offices in Culpeper. And it's addressed to Stephen A. Armstrong, Esquire, via fax, and there's a fax number, and Francis C. Terwilliger, Esquire, with a fax number. Mr. Armstrong was this appellant's attorney in the previous case. Mr. Terwilliger, of course, I'm sure that the board knows, is assistant commonwealth's attorney and was prosecuting that case. This letter was transmitted by those faxes to those lawyers. Mr. Armstrong, I assume he did his job and conferred with his client. Certainly he was notified, and that's well over a year ago that this letter was provided to this appellant. And to say that he hadn't had a reasonable opportunity to address that doesn't impress me to have much substance to it. The staff report was being provided 2 weeks in advance. That's 14 days, and I'm trying to do the math in my head. 14 days from the second of.
Do you want a calendar?
14 days from the second of before the second of December, I think is the 18th of November.
You want to check? Did it stay on calendar?
Yeah.
So he was provided 2 weeks in advance.
I want to add, came on the 17th.
Yeah, please do.
I want to add, Mr. Payne, that the appellant received a working document of the staff report well before the BZA received the staff report.
So the point about this is that the law requires that that citizens are entitled to staff reports for public bodies at the same time the public bodies have provided those documents. And that's what happened in this case. And as Mr. Stewart just said, he actually got a jump on it because he got a preliminary draft. So they were not obligated to give him that, but they did. And Mr. Mullen says he got it on the 17th. That's 2 weeks in advance, which is what he was told. There's a reference to it being incomplete staff report without source documents. Well, the staff report is one thing. It's attachments are another thing. Certainly, he knew what they were. The appellant knew what they were and could get them easily enough. The public notice on the 20th, the documents were available. They'd already been provided to him on the letter of the 17th. So I don't see that goes anywhere. I do note that the Flu Banner Review was published on the 27th. That's its publication date. So Mr. Mullen, I think, has withdrawn that. But just to be perfectly clear, in my judgment, the timing for the notice was proper and would not require the board to defer this action on this matter. I'm not entirely sure what his reference to the Fourth Amendment is. I think if I'm understanding him correctly based on the document, there's an argument that the staff was not permitted to go on the property to look at it. It seems to me that's an extraordinary argument. I think the law is clear that a zoning inspector has the right to go on property as long as it's not, doesn't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the property. That issue was settled in Virginia in 1923, if it came up. There is a Supreme Court case on the matter which dealt with a farm. It's what, in my bad old days when I did criminal defense work, we referred to it as the open fields exception. And the Supreme Court held in that case that a regulatory inspector, in this case it was actually, they were looking for illegal liquor because it was in the 20s, but the inspector went on the property of a farm in the open fields outside the curtilage of the residents, and the Supreme Court said that was perfectly unobjectionable. Now, of course, the other problem with this is, even if it were true that he had some expectation of privacy under the issue of unlawful search and seizure, there's no reference to any remedy. I mean, this is not like there hasn't been any motion to suppress evidence or anything of that sort, and there couldn't be, because that body of law simply doesn't apply. It is to be noted that there is no curtilage on the Union Mills property, because that curtilage is an area of land that's immediately equivalent to a dwelling house. There's no dwelling house on that property. So that whole property is open fields. Now, I will say, just so it's clear to everybody, when this issue was raised by Mr. Stewart, he was told by Mr. Sherrill that nobody was to come on his property. My instructions to the staff were, stay off it. If you need to go look at it and take pictures, do that from adjoining property. In the Fork Union case, it's easy because it's a small property. Most of it can be taken from the public highway. And the other property, it can be taken from other landowners, assuming they granted permission. So the argument is not well taken, and even if it were well taken, there's no remedy for it. So now, as to the issue of compelling attendance of witnesses, the very first thing I ever heard about compelling witnesses was a request that I somehow compel witnesses, that in the document that I received on yesterday morning. There's no way in the world that any court would ever enforce a subpoena for a witness on less than on one day's notice. It just simply wouldn't happen. So that's a day late and a dollar short is what that amounts to. I think if there was to be a witness summoned, his identity should be known and the substance of his testimony should be identified so that it would be known whether that's even material. I don't think that's got anything to do with it either. This is, in my opinion, an extensive procedural matter that has absolutely nothing to do with the substance of this case, with due process or any fair resolution of this case. The applicant is the appellant. I'm sorry, I keep saying the applicant. I mean the appellant. The appellant has a perfect opportunity, if he thinks that there are other documents which the zoning administrator should have considered, to present them himself. And I am fair to say that in the 50 pages of email and fax that Mr. Mullen was kind enough to provide last week, effective on Monday, he's included whatever he wanted to include. He certainly had a lot of that. By the way, I did make one mistake in my statement that the fax was sent on Wednesday at 5:46. I look at, I have here the printout from my fax machine, and it's timed at 11/26/2014, which was last Wednesday, at 5:47:02 p.m. So it was not at 5:46, it was 5:47. I think the email was 5:46. I note that that's after business hours, and it was effectively a legal holiday, because the next day was Thanksgiving, and the day after that was a legal holiday. So
it's effectively received on Monday morning.
It was actually and effectively received on Monday morning. That's right. And we took immediate action to deal with it. So I see no mandate that the board defer action on this based on anything that the appellant has raised. Now, on the other hand, if the board see that it's appropriate to defer the matter, the county doesn't have any objection to that. It would have been nice to hear about this someday than the day before the meeting. But the one thing that is important is that whatever date the board chooses, if it chooses to defer it, the board should only defer that on, the record should be clear that it's done on the motion of the appellant. And I did hear Mr. Mullen use the word move, so I assume that was what his intent was too. As to the date, I'm not sure that the appellant has been totally consistent when he asked for January the 6th. I don't have a particular objection to January the 6th, but if he's to be consistent and the date is to be the regular date set by the bylaws, it would be the second Tuesday, that's the 13th. And I also see there's some objection to it being held at 7 instead of 7:30 in order to accommodate the appellant. If the board sees fit to defer the matter, then I suggest that you not hear anything else tonight. I don't see any reason to bifurcate it. And that it be deferred until January the 16th, January the 13th at 7:30.
Mr. Chair, if I may respond. January the 13th, you're right, it is the second Tuesday. With regards to time, sir, the completed staff report was produced on November the 21st. The notice was given on November the 20th. That's 12 days for the appellant over the course of a holiday to prepare for this hearing. That's 12 days. It's simply not reasonable. There's no reason to rush to judgment. That's point number one. Point number two is this. For better or for worse, there is already a perception that the BZA is simply a rubber stamp for for the zoning administrator in the zoning department. I will observe for the record that even absent the recusal of Ms. Walker, she's continued to remain at the table throughout the presentation of this particular motion. And it is my motion, to be sure. It is my motion. But third, even Mr. Payne allows that if conversations were held outside of the confines of this hearing about this matter, and from the complainant, who is also a Board of Zoning Appeals member, that, I suggest, warrants recusal of the members who participated in those conversations. It's simply not fair to the appellant to do it any other way. That's all. Thank you, sir.
Comments from board members? Do you have a desire?
My preference would be to discharge the matter for the sake of the people that have gathered here tonight. But by the same token, given the weight of the conversation that we've had here, my preference would be to defer the matter to the 13th of January and permit the full board to seek that night to hear the matter. Since we are, in fact, missing the board chair tonight, I do find some of Mr. Mullins' remarks to be a bit demeaning to the board, frankly, and I think...
If you would tell me what they were, that was certainly not my intention, sir.
But I also think that the staff and their remarks and Mr. Payne's remarks have addressed those point by point, frankly. I think we're on good grounds here to act or not act either way, Mr. Chairman.
I agree with you. I think this can wait till January when we have Mr. Morris with us, and we'll certainly give everybody time to address what needs to be addressed, and we'll get it right.
Mr. Chairman, there's one other issue that Mr. Mullen raised in his rebuttal, and that is if he's going to challenge other members, specifically if he's going to challenge you, I think you need to know that now.
Well, that's part of my concern in your remarks. If that, in fact, is an issue, I'd rather learn it tonight than on the 13th of January. So.
Certainly. And I've been circumspect because I want to preserve not only my own respectfulness of this body, but also the independent and private conversations of the members of the board. And so what I will do, and I don't want to say anything that's untrue. I don't want to misrepresent anything, to be sure. What I will do is provide those concerns in writing. And for this board, I will say that I will do it. This is the second. If you could give me until next Monday to provide what those concerns might be.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that's fair. If, I don't know how Mr. Mullen's going to get more information than he has tonight. He has undertaken to challenge the actions of members of the board and doesn't identify who's being challenged. Mrs. Walker's already disqualified herself. She is no longer required. The statute used to require that when a member disqualified himself for conflict, he had to leave the room. That statute no longer says that. So the fact that she's sitting here, she has been advised that she cannot participate in the discussions in any form, except as a citizen. If he's going to challenge somebody else, it seems to me that he has a duty to challenge whoever he's challenging now.
Your Honor, sir, Mr. Chair, the only problem with that is I don't have the benefit of the knowledge of the conversations of all of the members of the board. And I'll ask Mr. Payne, are you functioning as counsel for the BZA?
No, sir. As you well know, Mr. Mullen, the BZA is an independent body appointed by and responsible to the court. It is not a member. It is not an organ of county government.
So one of the things I would respectfully ask, Mr. Chair, you're the only person who can ascertain who among the board has had these conversations. And have you discussed this matter prior to being asked to decide it under your court-appointed dictates? You have that power. I do not, sir. And I do recommend that we settle that this evening. That would make our action very clear.
I'd like to return to the idea of deferring it. Carol, you don't have a comment on the deferring because you're not participating in this. You two have both said you were willing to defer till January 13th, and let's make it 7:30 if that's what works. Is that okay, Jason?
That's fine.
So from a point of view of deferral of the hearing, we'll make that deferred till January. If you all are in agreement, do I hear ayes on that?
Aye.
Then, and I also concur, so you get your three votes. All right, and the issue of whether or not anyone else should be recused from this thing, I'm not quite sure how we'd proceed on that, unless the board wants just to get together and discuss that on their own. That doesn't need to be a public meeting.
That, I think that would be inappropriate.
Yeah, I do.
To get together on their own?
I think
Mr.
Mullen is the person who's challenging you, and I think he has a duty to tell you what he's challenging. And if he tells you what he's challenging, then you will know, you'll have at least an opportunity to know whether you're the one that's being challenged. Now, he's already made the point with Mrs. Eager, she's already addressed it. I haven't heard any challenge of Mr. Loving, I haven't heard any challenge of the chairman. I don't know whether there is or not, but I think he has a duty to tell you what his challenge is.
Mr. Chair, the challenge is this. You've said as much in the public meeting here that Ms. Walker conversed with you about this matter pending before the BZA.
She told me of her complaint, yes.
If you could simply ask the other members of the board, or if I could, I don't think that would be in order using Robert's rules, sir, but Ms. Eager is sitting here. She's also an adjoining landowner. I would not want to accuse anyone falsely, but I believe if Ms. Walker has appealed to you, she may have appealed to others.
I've had conversations with Mrs. Walker. She has contacted me. I have not contacted her. I'm also on the Planning Commission, and many people call me and tell me what complaints they have, but I don't feel that that would influence me in any way.
And I don't know about Mr. Loving. I don't have the power to ask.
You wish to address that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I also have been contacted by Ms. Walker. Her call, not mine. Again, as a complainant, and I've heard her concerns, understand her concerns. All that put aside, she's also stepped aside from these proceedings at this point. So to Mr. Payne's point, she's functioning as a citizen of the county and not as a member of the Board of Zoning Appeals at this point.
So, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me the issue is Mr. Mullen has now heard what each of you has said. If he's going to challenge you, I suggest that it would be appropriate for him to challenge now.
What's your feeling, Mr. Mullen?
I don't believe that's required. I think everyone has to make their own determination about recusal. And I'm going to need to see what the research says about that. This is somewhat outside of the norm, I think. At least it is for me. So I need to see what the law says about it, and I need to determine what my client wants me to do about it, because it simply isn't my decision to make. It either belongs to the person who should or might recuse themselves, or the decision belongs to my client, and I just don't have the authority to do that tonight.
For the record, I understand, I think I hear the members of the board saying that, with the exception of Mrs. Walker, none of the three of you feels a need to recuse yourselves.
That's right.
I went to the trouble before I spoke to Mrs. Walker to inquire as to what the legal status of a conversation was, and the response that I got was that if two members are discussing the complaint without coming to any kind of voicing what they're going to do, what action they plan to take, that was not a was not a violation if more than two got together. That was prohibited by the requirements for BZA.
I think those may be overlapping requirements of law. I would only respectfully say if you found out that the judge or the jury that was deciding your case in a very most important matter to you had met privately before any evidence was introduced at all to speak to a member of the panel who was also the complainant and hear their point of view first, I suspect that one in that situation might have feelings about the fairness of the process themselves.
It's quite possible, but having researched what the requirements are, as far as I know at this point, there's been no violations whatsoever.
And I'm unprepared to say that there is. Not tonight, at least, sir. And also, I do want to clear this up, Mr. Loving. I've tried to be very circumspect in my comments and to be very respectful as well. To the extent that I've said anything you find offensive, please, please know that it was not intended.
I understand. Well, based on the deferral, then, I certainly don't feel a need to recuse myself, nor do these two. Harold hasn't been party to any of this, so I don't guess he will. I think we can adjourn with the idea that it's all deferred till January 13th at 7:30. Is that acceptable to you, Mr. Mullen?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I think we are adjourned. Otherwise, we've been doing the whole same thing over again.